Hello, and welcome to MMG's 2021 third quarter production report teleconference. This report and today's discussion cover the operational performance of MMG's assets for the September quarter. Joining us today is MMG's CFO, Ross Carroll, and other members of MMG's executive team. I will now hand over to Ross, who will discuss the highlights of the report, after which there will be an opportunity to ask questions.
Thank you, Brent, and hello to everyone who is joining us today. Firstly, I'm saddened to report an accident this quarter involving a bus transporting employees of our contract partners to Las Bambas, which caused the tragic death of 16 passengers. This tragic event reminds us that we must always place safety at the forefront of everything we do at work and in our daily lives. MMG continues to support the ongoing investigation into this incident and expresses its deepest sympathies to the families and friends of those involved. At our operations, our total recordable injury frequency rate for the year to date was 1.16 per million hours worked, as we continue to try and eliminate all injuries from our workplaces. Before moving to the operational performance of the business, I would also like to mention a very important commitment that we have made towards reducing our emissions footprint. In early October, along with our peer companies from the International Council on Mining and Metals, we announced a commitment to target net zero emissions by 2050. As part of this commitment, we are implementing a whole-of-company climate resilience strategy, which covers energy mix, technologies, efficiencies, and mitigation measures that will determine interim 2030 targets and support the 2050 goal. This work is due for completion in early 2022, and we look forward to sharing the results with you. Now to address operational performance. In the third quarter of 2021, MMG produced around 91,000 tonnes of copper and 62,000 tonnes of zinc. On a full year basis, our expectation for zinc production remains in the range of 240,000 to 260,000 tonnes. However, we have slightly lowered our expectation for total copper production to between 345,000 and 355,000 tonnes. I'll explain the reason for this adjustment shortly. Las Bambas copper production in the September quarter was 79,000 tonnes. This represented a decrease of 6% on the prior year. During the quarter, production was impacted by a community road blockade that restricted inbound and outbound logistics and people movement for approximately 20 days and limited mining operations for 12 days. This caused total mining volumes to be around 5 million tonnes below plan during the quarter. To mitigate this impact, we processed stockpiles to maintain plant throughput, albeit the lower grades resulted in production levels lower than planned. Total copper production from Las Bambas is now expected to be around 300,000 to 305,000 tonnes of copper in concentrate, compared to the previous guidance of around 310,000 tonnes. Despite the lower production, C1 costs are expected to be around 10 cents lower at US $1 to $1.10 per pound. This lower cost base is due to the strength of the moly, gold and silver prices, which increase our byproducts credits, as well as ongoing Chalcobamba delays. The community road blockade that took place during the quarter in the Chumbivilcas region, some 200 kilometres from Las Bambas, related to community demands for further integration into the Las Bambas value chain through a large number of service contracts, as well as government classifications of these communities as an area of direct influence. On September 30, an agreement for the temporary removal of the roadblocks was reached and transport operations were able to resume. Part of this agreement revolved around a commitment to establish commercial relationships between Las Bambas and community organisations. Discussions are now underway. While roads remain clear in the Chumbivilcas province, in recent days, new roadblocks have been established in Cotabambas and Chalawachu, which are both in the same province as Las Bambas. These communities are demanding the attendance of the President, Pedro Castillo, or the Prime Minister to discuss social and economic development of the region and the fulfilment of commitments from Las Bambas and the government. Again, these roadblocks are extremely frustrating and we continue to push for dialogue with communities and government to remove the blockades. Part of the frustration we feel is the roadblocks cost not only us, but the local and national economies of Peru. Since the commencement of development of Las Bambas, per capita income has more than tripled in our host province, the poverty rate has halved, and basic health and development outcomes have improved considerably. Las Bambas provides over 1% of Peru's GDP, and significant funds are now flowing locally from royalties and soon mining cannon payments from profits. All these benefits are put in jeopardy by a single community seeking to leverage transport disruptions as a means of negotiating. At present, supplies on site are enough to continue production. However, mine development is starting to be impacted, and if the roadblocks are not clear by the end of October, we will need to cease all operations and stop production. We hope to seek resolution of these blocks as soon as possible. Las Bambas is not alone in facing heightened community protest following the recent elections in Peru, and we continue to work constructively with the Peru mining sector and new leaders in the Ministry of Mines and the Council of Ministers to broker more enduring solutions. Current stockpiles on site are around 100,000 tonnes of concentrate, or about 30 to 35,000 tonnes of copper metal. Finally, in Las Bambas, following the submission of the original application in February 2019 and the completion of the prior consultation process, Las Bambas continues to seek regulatory approval for the development of the Chalcobamba pit. A combination of lengthy community consultations and administrative delays, as well as complications associated with the 2021 national elections, continue to delay the receipt of the relevant permits. It is difficult to predict the timing of the permit approvals, as from a Las Bambas perspective, there is no reason why they could not be awarded tomorrow. We continue to work with the Ministry of Energy and Mines to seek a swift resolution. Moving on to Kinsevere, copper cathode production of 11,700 tonnes is 8% below the second quarter. Processing plant performance remains strong, with a record recovery rate in July and a quarterly average recovery of 97.8%. However, with mining operations still suspended at Kinsevere, the continued depletion of the remaining medium-grade stockpiles, as well as lower delivered grades from third-party ore suppliers, meant that average copper feed grade fell to 1.9% compared to 2.2% in the prior quarter. While optimisation works continue for the Kinsevere expansion project, mining of the remaining ore reserves are now not expected to resume before the end of 2021. As a result, copper cathode production for the full year is expected to be between 45 and 50,000 tonnes. We expect an investment decision on the Kinsevere expansion project by the end of 2021, which will see a shift to the mining and processing of sulphide ores and the introduction of a cobalt circuit, extending the life of the mine for a further 10 years and taking copper equivalent production levels back above the historical level of 80,000 tonnes. I will now move on to our zinc operations, Dugald River and Rosebery. The Dugald River zinc production, 48,000 tonnes, was 21% above the second quarter, which was impacted by a planned maintenance shutdown in June. Both mining and plant throughput rates were strong, delivering an annual run rate of above 2 million tonnes. During the quarter, however, an incident with the agitator truck in the underground mine impacted the delivery of cement and the backfilling of stopes. The carry-on impact of this is that mining rates have been lower in October. However, we're still confident production guidance of 180 to 190,000 tonnes of zinc will be delivered. Meanwhile, recent strength in the lead prices, as well as the low prevailing TCs in 2021, mean that full-year C1 costs should be at the lower end of the guidance range of US$0.65 and US$0.70 per pound. At Rosebery, zinc equivalent production of around 32,000 tonnes was 27% lower than the prior period due to the combined impact of lower ore mined, lower throughput and reduced ore grades for all metals. Mining and processing volumes and grades were impacted by higher mining dilution and a rockfall in the northern exploration decline. This added up to 2 hours to underground haul times and therefore impacted the delivery of ore to the plant. This issue has now been rectified and we expect production to increase in the fourth quarter. Zinc production for 2021 is expected to be near the upper end of our 60 to 70,000 tonne guidance range as new larger mining stopes are brought into production and grades recover from the third quarter. Similar to Dugald River, high byproduct prices and low TCs will also drive costs towards the lower end of the guidance range of negative 20 cents per pound. I will now hand you over to the moderator to take your questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Lawrence Liu with BOCI. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you, Ross. Can you hear me?
Yes, thanks, Lawrence. Yep.
Hi. Just a couple of questions regarding Las Bambas. First of all, in your presentation, you mentioned there's roadblocks in neighboring regions. Does it impact your operation at all? If it is, if it does, in what extent? And secondly, we still have not get the approval for Chalcobamba project, and it seems there's no timetable for it. So can you give us some idea in case we don't have the approval for the entire year next year, what will the output of Las Bambas will be for copper next year? Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Right. To your first question, Lawrence, the way the roadblocks impact the operations is that was three ways, really. Firstly, we can't get our supplies into the mine, so they'll block, I guess the most obvious one is diesel, so we end up eventually running out of diesel, so we can't run the haul trucks and other plants. So you've got the incoming supplies. It also makes it very, very difficult for us to swap our people over, because the vast majority come to site by road, so we can't get them through. And then the reason why our stockpiles are building is we're unable to get the concentrate stockpiles down the road and onto the railway line into the port. So that's why it impacts on production. And this time around, we didn't really have a chance to get our supplies back to full storage levels because it was only a sort of less than a week between the ending of the previous roadblock and then the commencement of these two new ones. So that's what we didn't really have full inventory to start with. So, I hope that's clear on your first question. Now, with the Chalcobamba approval, we've expected and been advised by the government that we would get this numerous times during the past 6 to 12 months, and even this week we were hopeful of getting it, but that didn't eventuate. So it's really hard to predict, and obviously with the new government, it's a complex situation in Peru, and we're already on our second mining minister, even though the government was only elected at the end of July. So it is very difficult to predict and hard to manage. We're still doing some work on this, but if for some reason we weren't able to get Chalcobamba approved and get moving there next year, I think our production would be around about the 300,000 tonnes a year. But, we're still working on that, and we'd obviously do everything we could to mitigate the impact from not having those approvals.
Okay, can I have one follow-up question regarding the roadblock thing? So
yep.
Your new guidance regarding the output for Las Bambas is 300,000 to 305,000 tons this year. What's your assumption regarding the current roadblock? Are you assuming it to be resolved in certain time so that you can reach that level, or because based on your information, it seems that if the roadblock continues, you may have to stop operation after a certain period of time, and that won't be too long. So what's your assumption regarding the current roadblock?
Yeah, that's a good question. And yeah, thanks for asking that. Yeah, the current assumption is predicated on that roadblock being cleared by the end of October. So if it if it wasn't cleared, there'd be more downside risk to our guidance.
Okay, thank you, Ross.
Yeah, thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jack Shang with Citi. Please go ahead.
Hey, Ross. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Jack. Good, thanks, Jack. How are you?
Hey. Good, good. Thank you. Just actually a similar question on the around the last members. So I want to have an assessment, right? So what are the next steps for us to potentially contact the relevant authorities? And I know there's no timeline right now, but what are the key next steps, and how are things on the ground? Is the new Minister of Mining appointed already, and have they already been running the offices? Are they receiving opening for these approval requests? And what are the initial colors? So anything on the ground would be very helpful. And on top of that, right? So whether the board or the management team beyond the last members, what we're looking at and what we're looking for going forward for future growth options. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Jack. I might just hand over to Troy Hay, who's our Executive General Manager looking after corporate affairs, to answer your first question. And then I'll come back to the growth question, if that's okay.
Sure.
Thanks, Ross. Hi, Jack. Big questions. What we're looking at the moment is, I guess, two problems. One on the roadblock, which is in the Chalawacho and Cotabambas region, which goes back to the 2016 roadblock that we experienced there, and the development plan put in place for that region. Groups have returned to the road claiming more and faster development on that 2016 plan, as well as a set of other measures. So we are working really closely with them. There is no doubt that dialogue is the best way to work with this. We are on the ground working closely in terms of all of the communities and with a number of social development initiatives underway. Part of the struggle with this one is the groups have called for both the President and Prime Minister to attend, and a delegation headed up there on October 18th of senior Vice Ministers, but the community weren't happy to see them, so they were sent back, and they are now waiting for the President and Prime Minister. The Prime Minister is not up for approval by Congress until next Monday, the 25th, and whether that's still an appropriate thing to happen is what we're working through on the ground. So it's a bit difficult to call ahead. What our next steps are is making sure we get government as involved as we can, and we are working very closely with the new minister, as well as new ministers across other portfolios. And the cooperation is good. They are all fairly new to their portfolios, and so there's a bit of learning going on. And we hope to get those meetings and to get a resolution of this as soon as we possibly can. On the ground itself, these are the communities around the mine, so they know Los Bumbas very well. The change that they've experienced over the 5 or 6 years of Los Bumbas has been incredible in terms of development, in terms of the wealth of that region, in terms of reductions in poverty, etc. So this is more, to class it as anti-mining would be completely wrong. It's more how are benefits accruing, more benefits are sought, and many of the promises, especially from government delivery, are not coming quick enough. And so it's working directly with the communities, which we still have a good relationship with, but trying to expedite delivery, trying to get government involved, and trying to make sure that roadblocks aren't the chosen way of negotiation by keeping our dialogue tables working. So it's not a position we want to be in. It's frustrating, but it's also not a breakdown of relationships. It's trying to expedite social development together with company, government and communities and do that as best we can. So that's where we're focused. The second part on the AIA, as Ross mentioned, is all the processes are complete. So the consultant privy or the prior consultation process is done, signed and delivered. It is really just getting that AIA signed, and we are working at every level of government. We are working really closely with the community of Huancuire, which is the impacted community. And again, I think we will get there, and every possible effort is being taken. There is not huge conflict on the ground at all. It is about getting the benefits right, the commercial agreements right, and making sure the government, community and company are together when we negotiate. So, as Ross said, it is frustrating, but we're really cooperating well with the new government, and I think with the new Prime Minister coming in next week, we're hoping we can get a swift resolution to the current roadblocks.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Troy. And just a quick follow-up, if I may. What are these roadblocks? We know that these have been happening over the past few years. Sometimes they cause a certain amount of disruptions, but these are temporary in nature. How did most of these roadblocks ended up or ended? Meaning that what usually that we do to pacify them or to make them feel better, to remove the roadblocks usually? Were there specific demandings for jobs or for like payment or like some sort of subsidy being handed to them? So are any further detail color would be very helpful. Thanks.
The struggle we face, Jack, is that it's very easy for a very small group from a single community to occupy the road and just turn back all Las Bambas traffic with limited, you know, so they're very temporary. It can be, you know, literally a couple of people or a wooden gate across the road, and that stops us until we typically get a joint delegation of government and company. We enter a dialogue process and we try to convince the communities to you know, sign up to that dialogue process so we can work through the issues. The frustration for us is we are working with all communities along the road at all times, and there is a very large social development investment underway. There are contracts with many communities for road maintenance, for other areas, and agricultural programs, infrastructure programs, but the struggle is a single community or even a part of a single community can block a road and demand additional benefits, and we have to balance that conversation with all of the other communities who, if we do one conversation with one, will then flow down, and that's why typically the way to resolve is to get government, company, community together to agree on the scope of discussions and to end the roadblock and enter a dialogue process, and that's exactly what we're trying to do it in the Cotabambas and Chalawatra region at the moment.
Okay, thanks. So if I understand it correctly, so there are, of course, multiple communities, and any one of them could be causing this trouble. But there is a certain procedure that we need to work through. You don't need to really negotiate with each one of them, but there is like a high-level mechanism that you work with the government together with all these communities. But I think by doing that way, it kind of also slowed down the whole process of getting the issue, specific issue addressed. Is that the correct understanding, right?
Yes, and as Ross said, it's not just us. I think with the new government, a lot of communities will come back and seek to resolve current grievances or seek greater benefits, and that's happening across Peru at the moment. You will have seen in previous years, sometimes we get to a point where there is a local state of emergency declared, which is when they will move in with police and military support to remove protesters, but that again takes time and brings with it risk. So our preference is always to get a dialogue started, agree on the issues, and then work closely with the community to resolve.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thanks, Troy.
Right, and thanks, Jack. Now, in relation to your second question about growth, I'll just give a little bit of background too before I answer that question. China Minmetals, which is obviously a major shareholder and who's supported MMG through its growth over the last 10 years, has just had a change in chairman. And I guess that change in chairman, I think, will be potentially be positive for MMG. But the chairman has reiterated that they will continue to support MMG on its growth, and that they see mining and MMG as, you know, a core part of their overall group. So we certainly still have the desire and the support from the major shareholder to enable us to grow. Now, and again, I think our strategy is fairly clear that we're looking for copper, cobalt, and zinc, and it's really in three regions, which is, you know, Central Africa, the Andes region of Latin America, and also Australia if we can. So that there's no change there, but obviously, you know, good opportunities are hard to come by in the present environment, but still looking every day and still very keen to grow.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Ross.
Yeah, thanks, Jack.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Radcliffe with Global Mining Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Maybe just shifting to the DRC then and Kinsevere. Just in terms of the extension project there and the restart of mining that was scheduled and then it's been put back, could you give us maybe a bit more colour what's happening there and what sort of pushed that timetable back? And then in terms of the stockpiles there, in case that timetable continues to slip, how large are they and what is that grade of that medium grade stockpile?
Yep, okay. Now, thanks, David. Thanks for the questions. Yeah, with the KP project, we've still got our engineering teams working on optimising it. And, we do expect to get it approved by the end of this year. Now, with the mining, there's a bit of a natural cutoff because the DRC has a wet season. It's a very wet season. And we've basically just run out of time to engage the mining contractor before Christmas. And if we were to engage them in that sort of December-January period, you're engaging them right in the middle of the wet season, which is the least productive time but also the most dangerous. So that's the reason why we've pushed first mining out to April. The delay of the KEP has meant that we're not in a position to sign up the mining contractor and get them sort of started before the wet season starts. So it's purely that you've got a natural boundary there. Now, with the stockpiles, we've certainly got enough stockpiles to continue through to April. And by that stage, we would definitely be starting mining by then. So there's enough stockpiles. And the stockpiles are around about 2%. And then they sort of obviously go up and down depending on which stockpile we're in. And then, we've got contracts in place to get third-party ores as well. So, so I think, the average feed grade sort of over the upcoming period is going to be around the 1.8 to 2%.
Okay, perfect. That's really helpful. Then just probably on Las Bambas, you've sort of answered the questions for everyone there. But then on the debt side, is there anything we need to consider if there is a full stop in terms of, short-term repayments or covenants?
No, we'll be fine. Obviously, this period of high copper prices has put us in a strong position at Las Bambas. So we've got we've already got enough cash there to make our payments for June and December, and I guess I'm not sure how long you've been following MMG for, but we've got a very understanding group of bankers, being that they're Chinese SOE banks as well. So if it did come to ultra prolonged stop, it's still going to be an issue. But as I said, we've basically got enough cash there that we could make those payments already now.
Yep, sure. No, I get that. I just thought I should ask anyway.
Yep.
Perfect. Thanks. I'll pass it on.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Chris Hsu with Horizon Asset. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ross. Thank you very much for the presentation. I've got two questions. The first one regarding Las Bambas. So for the the protesters and also the agitators, right? So it's like, you know, the government and also, you know, the companies, you know, are trying to pacify them, right? But there was actually no cost to them, you know, causing more trouble. So is there any sort of, you know, benefit lost to them? I mean, if they continue protesting, I mean, will the payments or benefits related to the mine operation given to them be suspended? And also, broadly related to that question, I remember, you know, the new administration, you know, had proposed, huge increases in taxes, and also they have also talked about, building railways, or maybe asking you guys to build railways. But I'm just wondering, I mean, is there any discussion regarding those? That's the first question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So I might answer question two first, and then I'll hand back to Troy to answer your first question about the payments and benefits in those communities. The government did get elected with part of its mandate about increasing taxes to the mining industry. That's something we're obviously on the alert for. Now, at this point, we haven't had any sort of proposals from the government, albeit that we do know that in the background they want to increase taxes. So we're at the moment just waiting to see what the proposals are. The one thing I would point out is that Las Bambas is the highest sort of has the highest tax rates actually of any mine in Peru at the moment, because the mine rates are tax rates are a bit variable. So so as I said, we're just waiting to see how that pans out. But now we do have a stability agreement that runs through to 2029. So, obviously it's better for everyone if we get a friendly resolution to it all. But until we get some idea of what they're asking for, we're unsure what the situation will be. But, and at this stage, you know, everything's still reasonably cordial with the new government. It's not like there's, you know, talk of mass nationalisation or anything like that. It's all relatively calm, and I think the major issue for the government is getting themselves settled in the meantime. Right. And I might hand you over to Troy for the first question.
Thanks, Chris. I guess just to take a step back, we do have a very good community team in Las Bambas, and over the 6 years, almost 6 years of operation, we have done very well in terms of entering a region that has never experienced mining and was the poorest region in Peru, and it has fundamentally changed over that period. What the situation we have now is that, you know, there are many people in these regions who have existing contracts with Las Bambas and who are very linked to us in terms of keeping production going, and they have either employment with the mine or contracts. But the communities are complex, and there are many groups within them. So often those running the roadblock are a different group than those with contracts, and are a different group than those who are in leadership. And so it's a complex, ever-changing environment. And often those who are running the roadblocks have, as you said, time on their side. There is no direct impact from them for occupying a road, and it allows them to use that against Las Bambas or the government to seek greater support. So our real approach is to approach the communities as a whole and try to emphasise the benefits that do flow from Las Bambas, and they are significant. And as Ross said, that the frustration is those benefits are directly related to our production and our ability to deliver both production and profits. And the more that these roadblocks hurt that, the more impact we have on local regions. Let alone the impact on individual contracts or employees. So it's working really hard. It's really emphasising that these are different groups within communities. There are many that are supportive and work well with Las Bambas. There are many who have significant grievances with Las Bambas, and there are those in the middle, and trying to make sure we're working with all of them. But there is no tap we can switch off. There is no set of benefits we can withdraw for everybody that aligns completely with Las Bambas' interests, and that's why we need government dialogue and ourselves involved, and why we constantly work to deliver, you know, the social dividend from having Las Bambas as a neighbour. And it is significant, but you probably share some of our frustrations that, you know, we see these roadblocks. They have been part of operating our mine for the 6 years we've been there. and it is not easy to find an enduring solution.
Got it. Thank you very much, Ross and Troy. The second question is regarding, the financial side. So I'm just wondering, whether the management has thought about using A shares, for financing. Because recently we have seen, some other companies, including even, the red chip companies like CNOOC, CNOOC, to raise capital through the Asia market. So, and it seems that, there have been some recent policy changes regarding that front that may make it, easier, for us to, tap the Asia market. So just wondering whether the government has any thoughts on that. Thank you.
Now, Chris, at this stage, we've had no discussions on the A shares and not really giving any thought. I mean, at this stage, we're also fully financed and, unless we do something big on the M&A front, there's no need to raise any additional capital. So, obviously, doing a little bit of work in the background, but that's just to keep informed more than to actually action anything.
Got it. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Your next question comes from Joy Zhang with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Ross, for hosting the call. I just have a quick question about the Kinsevere. The first question is, do you see any possibility or chance that further delay of the investment decision? And the second one is that the rough schedule of the construction starts and the operation starts, the timeline. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I must say, Joy, I can't give you a 100% ironclad guarantee, but I don't expect there to be any further delay with the Kinsevere approval. So we are expecting that to happen in this last quarter of 2021. So that's the best sort of internal knowledge we've got at the moment. Now, in regard to the construction, we're actually still continuing to do a lot of the engineering work. I mean, that's part of the optimization process, but we are still moving forward behind the scenes and going out to tender on different packages of work. So, so that work is all happening now. Then obviously once it gets approved, we would speed everything up, but doing a lot of preparatory work, but obviously we're not going to let major contracts until we're 100% sure that the project's been approved.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Carroll for any closing remarks.
All right, well, I'd just like to thank everyone for dialing in today and thanks for the questions. And if there's any further questions, please follow up with Brent or our corporate affairs team. And thanks again for dialing in and goodbye.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.